What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Uncensored Podcast. Today we have Hall of Fame lacrosse coach and Trinity lacrosse coach Pete Schroeder and Trinity junior attackman Noah Hollister.
How are we doing, guys?
Hey.
So we're going to start off by asking Coach Pete a couple questions, just
sure.
Get the feel. So, Coach, obviously you won the state championship this year, first time since 2017. What does this state championship mean to you, and how does this one compare to the other ones?
All the titles are special. They're all an important part of our tradition. For me, what happened, I guess it's just been so long, I forgot how many people that this makes happy. You know, and there were so many people that kind of came out of the woodwork, and everybody's congratulatory, and it's a great way to finish the year. But now this one, we kind of felt like we were close, especially in 2023, we felt like we were close, but we didn't get there. But these guys, this group of players, they got us over the hump. So they were terrific all year. I think they're the best team in Kentucky. That's a hill I'll die on. And, they were fantastic, but they really put in the work necessary to be champions before they were champions. And that's kind of hard. You've got to take a leap of faith as a player and go, okay, you know, I'll play along. I'll do this because I think it'll get us where we want to go. And these kids really bought into that, and to their credit. But it's just really fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say is like the hardest part of being a coach? Because like, you know, you have to deal with all the outside noise, problems with inside the program. What would you say is like the hardest overall part for being a coach?
The hardest part is you never feel like you're finished. You never feel like the job is finished. I'm like, I always feel like there's something else I can do. Can I watch some more film? Is there something else that I can watch or something that I can read that'll make us better? Is there some emails I haven't answered? Is there some stuff I need to do for my camp that's coming up? Is there stuff I need to do for the travel team? So, and then you throw in teaching on top of that, teaching the full load. It just feels like it just never, you know, there's, you know, at some point you got, my head has to hit the pillow and I have to go to bed, you know, because I got to get up and do it again the next day. So at some point I have to go, okay, enough's enough. But you kind of feel as a coach, as a teacher, you feel like, is there anything else I can do? Do I feel like I'm leaving something out? So that's the part of it where it's like, okay, I'm going to pour my entire soul into this. But the other side of that coin is you feel like, well, have I done enough?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so next question is, today you see a lot of younger kids, and with social media being a thing, they always want to make the highlight play. Like, when you're evaluating younger players, what's something that you want to see from them that you say, okay, I want that in my player?
I want them to be unselfish, and I want them to be ultra competitive, and I want them to try hard. If they do all that, and they do it in the preparation, I want to see it from them in practice. You know, I coach a team of 2029s, rising eighth graders. That's what I want to see out of all 22 of those kids when we practice.
Mm-hmm. And so, on the flip side, this season we added two new coaches to the varsity staff. What goes into you making a decision on if someone's qualified enough? What qualities do you look for when hiring or making a coaching addition to the roster?
Well, you know, the number one factor is, hey, is this somebody that can, you know, advance what we're doing or not? I have to feel like, okay, you've got to show me something from a tactical standpoint, from a human capital standpoint, from a relationship standpoint, a teamwork standpoint, a synergy standpoint, where somebody, you have to be able to help us elevate the program, okay? And you've got to kind of fill a need for us, okay? Everybody has a role for us. Coach Thompson has a key role for us.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of behind the scenes, but it's a key role. Obviously Coach Falinski has a key role for us on the offense. He and I kind of switched spots this year out of necessity because we thought he was in the process of moving out of town. And then once I said, I'll take the offense. Well, now we need a defensive coordinator. I used to run the offense and defense but it's too much. I can't do, I don't do either unit justice by doing that. So yeah. I was like, look, we really need to fill a need. And we were like, okay, we kind of have the best of both worlds here. Coach Carpenter is in the building. He's already a coach and he's got his own coaching pedagogy. And he's okay. You know, he's still learning about lacrosse, but then we can bring in Greg Winston too, who's got a little more lacrosse knowledge, some box experience, some analytics. So we kind of mashed those two guys together to be the defensive coordinator, and they both handled it like champs. They grew into that role, and I think the team grew with them. So that was, you know, we just happened upon two people that were like, okay, these two people can fit together, like, you know, a couple of Lego pieces that just snap right together, mm-hmm. and we roll with it. And they did a great job. So two easy choices, really.
And so Noah, like, when you, as a player, you have to, like, be, you want to have a good relationship with the coach. You want to, like, know the coach has your back. What is something that you look for in a coach to make you want to play for them or play harder for them?
I think something that really stands out about coaches, especially Coach Pete, is just how personable they are. Like, they aren't just a coach on the field. Like, they're coaching you about, like, life skills and teaching you lessons that you can carry throughout your entire life. And, honestly, I think being a coach is a hard job, and you have a lot of responsibility. But Coach Schroeder does a great job, and I wouldn't want to play for anybody else. So,
mm-hmm. And so obviously you've accomplished a lot so far. Even to your junior year, you just won a state championship, named to the all-tournament team. What keeps you hungry and wanting more on the lacrosse field, even though you've accomplished so much already?
I mean, I just think it's my love for the game. Like, I love the game so much, I never want to put it down, and I love every guy that's next to me, so I want to compete as hard as I possibly can just for my teammates, man. I think that's the most important thing, and if everybody on the team does that, you will accomplish great things, and that's exactly what we did this year, so.
So, that's Coach P. So, you took over for training in
2002.
Right. What made you want to come to Trinity, which had never had a lacrosse program before, and then down south, lacrosse had never really been a big sport. I think you coming from up north, playing lacrosse your whole life, right. What really brought you down here to want to continue to coach lacrosse?
Well, I passed a CPA exam, and I was going to take up golf. And then I found out that, like, hey, look, they have an adult team that plays, mm-hmm. so I was like, ooh, all right, well, I haven't played in a while. I'd been in the Army and all. I played in college, but then I went in the Army, and then I hadn't played, and then I went back to school, and I got my degree and my CPA license. So it had been years since I played, but I was like, okay, I'll start playing again. It was fun with playing with the adults. They're like, hey, we really need refs and coaches. And I'm like, ooh, reffing, I don't know about that. I was like, coaching, though, my dad was a coach in New Jersey. He's in two Hall of Fames there. So I was like, well, he made it look easy. It's not easy. He made it look easy. But I was like, well, maybe I'll do that for a couple of years. And I was incorrect. I did it for not a couple of years. I'm still doing it, you know, 23, 24 years later. But we had one team for the whole city,
mm-hmm.
a varsity and a JV for the whole city. That was it. We had 70 people playing high school lacrosse in the whole city. But what we would do is that team would go play out of town. We go to Carmel, Indiana, or Montgomery Bell in Tennessee, or Sycamore in Ohio. We would play in those areas on the weekends, but then we would split into four teams during the week and play each other. So the St. X coach and his sons were still playing. All their buddies were still playing. So St. X had enough for a team. The other school that had enough for a team was Ballard. Ballard had wow. enough people, yeah, to play. So Ballard had their own team. The next team was a group of players from Trinity, Cal, and I think the Oldhams.
Mm-hmm.
And me and Sean Hamill coached that. And on that team, there were six or seven Trinity kids that were going to come back and play again next year. And that's when Dr. Mullen and Dr. Zoller, they hired me to be the first lacrosse coach. I remember having a meeting. I was like, look, if we have 20 people, we'll have a team. The first meeting, we had 41 people. I'm like, all right, we're going to have a team. We might have two, actually. So that's kind of, and that's where we kind of, where we were off and running right there. So mm-hmm. Trinity's is St. X, Ballard, you know, we all kind of started about that same time in 2002. And eventually, I have a CPA license. I was working as a CPA in corporate accounting while I was coaching lacrosse at Trinity. And it's kind of like climbing the mountain. You're like, I'm on the wrong mountain. I want to be on that mountain over there. So that's when I switched careers. That was around 2012 or so. I went back, got my master's of arts in teaching, and I got hired at JCPS. I taught at Valley High School, but I still coached at Trinity. And a teaching spot came open at Trinity around 2016. So I got on at Trinity. So yeah, that's kind of like how I went from not even in the game to where we are today. Mm-hmm. So, but it's been a lot of great support from Trinity, the administration, and so many great, you know, parents and kids, and you know, now alumni, and you know, so it's been a great thing to be a part of from the go.
And then to add on that, what about Trinity has made you feel like it's like a home? It's like a home to you. What about it has made you like want to continue to stay, like do what you love? Because not many coaches coach of one program for as long as they do.
Yes, you're correct. So number one, Trinity has good administrative support from the top down. Mm-hmm. Some schools, you know, the tail kind of wags the dog, and you know, the administration's kind of weak, and they don't support the coach. Well, that doesn't happen at Trinity. That happens. So number one, without the support of the administration, it's too easy. Parents come in and kind of walk all over the coach. The coach is kind of helpless, and I'm like, well, why would you stay? I'm like, I wouldn't stay, but that's not happened to Trinity. So Trinity's got solid, you know, stable leadership, number one. Number two, honestly, it's just a great place to come to every day. You know, every day we come in, we see familiar people, you know, so many, like, positive people, and I can't even mention all of them, but there's, like, Coach Owens, always upbeat, Senior Amata, always upbeat. You know, Senior Cuenca, always upbeat. So it's just a great, you know, it's a great vibe there. Excuse me. It's just a great vibe, and it feels like a great place to go into work every day. So, you know, I found a job I want to retire from. It took me forever, because I worked till I started when I was 16. Most of those jobs were not jobs I wanted to retire from. But hey, Trinity, though, yes. And eventually I'll retire, but that's not any time in the next, you know, 10 years. And not any time in the next 5 years. Let's put it that way.
Must be that nice 401k.
Yeah, well, the 401k is crushing it right now, yeah. My Apple stock's taking off this week. Yep. NVIDIA split, and NVIDIA's doing was back on it. And I was like, okay, well, that helps. That 401k. Compound interest, start early.
Get that baby.
So then, early in your career, you had the infamous 4-peat at Trinity, where you won four straight state championships. So now with a team that's looking to try to go back-to-back, what qualities from that 4-peat team really helped stabilize the success to win four straight championships?
What we had there was we had a good culture that was handed down class to class.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a certain standard where they would hold each other to a very high standard, particularly as competitors. If we were not doing what it was going to take to win the game, we had players that would self-correct the other players and go, look, this is not going to work. We've got to, like, you know, hey, get back in line and let's do it the right way and that type of thing. So, and that the other thing was that group just stayed hungry. You know, I think we won in 2017, and we had a very junior-heavy team, even more so than this year. Like, we were really, really junior-heavy in 17. So we came back, and we kind of felt like, well, we kind of had all the answers, and we had a good year. But then at the end of the year, we kind of like, well, we just, you know, St. X outplayed us in the title game, and it was a terrible, bitter ending to the season. So, yeah, that right there, when you go from being the hunter to the hunted is a different mindset, but you still have to keep that hunter, that humble and hungry mentality. So that was the thing. That team, the 4-peat teams in 06 and 07, those teams continued to stay hungry even though we had success. So that's what we need out of the 25 team to start.
So Noah, after hearing that, what do you think, like, you, like as a class, what do you think we need to do to, you know, keep that camaraderie, just to keep everything glued together, but also pushing each other to want that second championship?
I mean, I think, I mean, I speaking from, like, for myself, I definitely want that second championship. Like, it's been, like, something I we've been chasing for the last 3 years was a state championship, and just after winning it this year, I can't imagine not winning it next year. Like, I want it so bad. And I think all the guys in our class and that were part of this team this year that are coming back, I think they're going to feel the same way. So, I mean, just like Coach Schroeder said, we have to stay hungry, and we're going to have to stay humble and just play balls to the wall, I guess. So.
Yep. Leadership is about not only showing up and doing your thing, but bringing others along. So we need the 25s to kind of lead the party on that. And I think we're set up with a lot of leadership in that 25 class to help us do that. So I like the setup here. We will miss the 24s for sure. The 24s were fantastic. We will miss those guys, but the people we have coming back, we have a good setup as far as culture and leadership, and I think that's something that we can improve upon and keep working on.
So then, basically, like when Sam Neff, one of our senior defenders, he went down our Cinex game, and then, so when you have to fill a spot, and it's kind of like that next minute mentality, what do you look for in the players below him to say, okay, you're going to fill that spot? And, like, what do the players who want to fill that spot need to do to show you that they want that spot?
You got to prepare like you're the man, even if you're not going to be the man.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're at the end of the bench as, like, the third, you know, the sixth attackman, you have to prepare like you're going to be the guy. Even though you might not be the guy next game or the game after or the rest of the season, but you got to prepare like that, so when it's your turn and you're ready to go, you're ready to be the man. You can step in and be the man. So we were looking for people who, in that case, it was very sudden. We had to figure out who was going to match up well physically with St. X's attack. We had to figure out who could help us on team defense and in clearing. And we had some options. And you know, we kind of just took something and ran with it and see how it works. So, but yeah, it's really just a matter of like, hey, these guys already know I'm watching everything. So when I watch them practice, that some kids are 60 yards away and think I'm not watching, I'm like, yes, I'm watching. But same thing in the weight room, you know, oh, coach is just sitting over there on his phone. I'm like, well, I'm on my phone, but I'm also watching. I'm like, so I'm watching like who prepares in a way that's going to have them ready to step into the threshold in that moment.
Mm-hmm. So, Noah, you were a starter on varsity since your freshman year. What, like, going back to your freshman year, what drove you to, you obviously had a 60-goal season your freshman year. What really provided, like, that spark in you to just keep pushing and have that drive?
Well, I mean, I had a little competition at the start. There were some seniors that were filling the spot that I played in. But, I mean, obviously, like, I knew I had the talent and the ability to play on the big stage. And I just stayed true to it and worked hard every day, practicing in the weight room. And I got my turn, and I showed why I think I should have been in that spot. So,
yeah, you can see it. I coached him and a number of these other guys when they were in eighth grade with the Kings. And you can see it, you know, it's kind of a right-handed world. So when we do stick drills, the lefties kind of get a ton of work on their offhand. So Noah's offhand has been, you know, pretty close to seamless for a while now. But you could see, like, okay, this guy is one of the guys that could contribute as a freshman. I was like, this could happen if he continues to ascend and keeps working. And he did. And he was ready, to his credit.
Mm-hmm. So then, So another 25, Sam Alexander, he played a little bit his freshman year, but not in a position he normally played. How does that go down when you tell someone, hey, you're going to play, but at a different position?
Well, it kind of, you know, that position he played, he ended up playing short stick D-middy, which I was, number one, I'd coached him in box lacrosse when he was younger in eighth grade with the Kings and such. So I was like, I knew he could do it. I knew he could do that. He could pull it off, and he could stick handle. He's a little young. He's 15 years old playing against 18-year-olds, perhaps. Yeah. So, you know, I was like, that part he's going to have to figure out on his own. But yeah, so usually that's more like, hey, look, it's a matter of playing time. I'm like, you can play more now if you'll play this. You'll fill this need for us. So, and then usually that elicits a response like, yes, I'd rather play than sit.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, okay, I'll try it. So I'm like, so that's kind of where we were with Sam. And we've done that before with some other folks too. And say, like, hey, we'll have you switch positions so we can get you on the field more and you can contribute at a higher level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like since I've been there, I've seen a couple times where it's like, someone might not be playing at a certain position that they're comfortable with, but you got to get used to being comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yes.
And so some people just have to realize, okay, if I want to see the field and they're in a spot that's thinner, maybe I need to take my talents elsewhere on the field.
Chase Turner is a player that he's a 25 that did that in mid-year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it was tough to ask of him. He was a trooper, though, and he did a great job. He pretty much switched positions, and he's going to be one of our key players next year. So, so yeah. But, yeah, the player, is the first thing is you've got to be open to it. You have to have an open mind and go, yes, this can work. If you have doubts like, ah, I don't want to do this, I'm not doing this, I don't like this, I see myself as in another position, right there we're off to a bad start and we're it's probably not going to work. So to the player's credit, guys like Sam Alexander who switched and Chase Turner, you know, those guys that switch positions, they gave it their best shot. They knew it was good for the team too, so they knew they could, you know, it was going to help the team.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, those are kind of tough conversations, but with our culture and the people we have, most people are very much team oriented and willing to chip in and help out the best way that they can help the team.
As they should be.
So Noah, like Coach P, obviously he schedules a lot of like team camps, like the UNC camp, the UNC overnight camp, and then the Atlanta overnight, which is going to happen this year. How do you think Coach Pete, when he like kind of builds that team camaraderie, how do you think that helps the team like gel as one?
Well, I mean, if you're playing out there on the field with, you know, like 20 other of your friends, like you're gonna play just as hard like as you would like, or you're gonna play harder than you would for like some random guys out there that you have no relationship with. And I think like building those relationships is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
One for lacrosse, because if you have a tight knit group, then and they're everybody's got the same goal, then you're gonna achieve it.
Mm-hmm.
But even after lacrosse, like those relationships carry on. Like guys from probably the 2017 team, they're still got going and playing golf and you know, catching a game at like Roosters or something together. You know, it's just part of it, man. And I think it's a really important thing. And I think Coach Schroeder does a great job of just bringing the team along and like helping us establish those relationships and grow. So that's probably one of my favorite parts about our lacrosse team is just, you know, how everybody's friends with each other.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we kind of lost a little bit of that in the pandemic, and we had struggled to get it back.
Yeah.
It was tough. You know, we had spent so much time apart. You know, we kind of had to start over on culture.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, but we feel like I have a good feeling about where it is now. But yeah, we learned obviously any time spent together as a group is far superior to time spent apart. So, you know, the more we get together, we do things like we go scrimmage at Macaulay. They're like, that's a long way to go for a scrimmage. But I'm like, that's essentially a retreat. You know, we all spend the day together. You know, we're a captive audience. And we stop at Bucky's on the way back just for giggles, you know, and whatnot. So, and clean bathrooms. But the relationship part of that can't be understated. That's massively important.
Mm-hmm. So obviously, I think it was last year, the vote came out that lacrosse was going to be a sanctioned sport by the KHSAA. What was your initial reaction that lacrosse is finally going to be sanctioned as a sport in Kentucky?
We had been close before, particularly before the pandemic, and then the pandemic kind of put the brakes on a lot of things. The KHSAA was just really trying to stay above water, not running a basketball or a football tournament.
Yeah.
You know, so that was put the KHSA just kind of on a in a scramble mode by themselves. So that stalled the growth, the you know, the idea of lacrosse getting sanctioned. So yeah, but I was excited. I was like, hey, think about where it came from to where it is now, and that's pretty extraordinary. So it's just the next step in the development of the game in Kentucky, and I'm grateful that the KHSA is going to provide their, you know, set of, you know, their organization and you know, their presence, their longtime presence in high school sports behind it. And I think it's only going to help the game for the long run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like once you get more, like, even with all these other schools that are going to join, it's just you're just going to see the game grow, like, more exponentially and get even more kids that maybe don't play lacrosse now, you know, just get them involved later on.
Absolutely, yeah. I think this is only going to help cement the game in the minds of people who are in areas of Kentucky that are not, you know, into lacrosse. But these kids that go play and then maybe they go to someplace like U of L or UK or Bellarmine or even like Western and, you know, they play like club lacrosse there and then they come back to their hometown and they can get lacrosse going at their school. So, you know, that's kind of like the big picture, like hope for, you know, growing the game and the KHSA lending, you know, sponsoring the sport is just a great additional step in that direction.
Mm-hmm. And so obviously, like, at the another thing I feel like lacrosse, like, training lacrosse does really well also is just making sure that everyone has a place, whether it's on JV or on varsity. Everyone has a role on the team, and everyone knows, like, what their role is. And it's like, if you can do your role, good things are going to happen.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, we try and make it as inclusive as possible. We had a – we were no-cut up to, like, 2008. 2008, we had 120-something kids. It was crazy. And we had, like, 60-something on the JV. So it was nuts. And the year before, we had graduated 27 seniors. So that part was tough. We pretty much graduated a whole team.
Yeah.
You know, and then in 2008, it was tough. So at that point, I was like, all right, look, we have to start making cuts. And I didn't like cutting people. I mean, we cut some people, and I was like, we did that for a couple years. And maybe around 2014 or so, we said, okay, look, no more cuts. We got to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
We got to find spots for everybody, and I'm really glad that it worked out that way. So yes, any kid can walk off. You know, you have to fill the forms out, and you have to pay the tuition to Trinity. But if you have the forms filled out, you pay the tuition to Trinity. Hey, we have a spot for you, and we'll figure it out. Now you get a chance to eat what you kill. You know, so if you're just out there going through the motions and not killing anything. You're not going to eat much. We have playing time. But if you go out there and kill it, we give you the vehicle to, like, you know, to eat. Mm-hmm. So that is out there for all of our players, okay? Some people take more advantage of it more than others. But those opportunities are there. And, yes, I'm glad that we can make lacrosse inclusive at Trinity.
Mm-hmm. So another thing that I noticed that you really well is you do a circle on your whiteboard of things that you can control and things that you can't control.
Right.
How does that help you as a coach to kind of calm the players down to be like, okay, these are the things that matter and that you can control versus the things that you can't control that are just completely out of your area of growth?
I think in general, just life in general, I think we're kind of overstimulated. You know, we get stimulated by something that happens in traffic, or we get stimulated by somebody that does something stupid at Kroger, or we get stimulated by somebody who does something at school that they're not supposed to do, or we get stimulated by some unexpected thing that happens. The thing is once we establish, like, what is under our control, we can kind of, like, focus our energy on those things and let the other things go. And don't let the other things kind of, you know, just bring our thoughts and our energy down. I think we humans only have so much mental energy.
Yeah.
At some point, if you keep responding to every single thing on social media, good Lord, you're going to be worn out. Yeah, I don't know how you're going to make it. I was like, you know. So some of that stuff on social media, I'm like, you know, I could take the lacrosse team at Trinity. We could walk across the Ohio River, you know, not on the pedestrian bridge, but literally walk on water. Most people would be like, whoa, that's biblical. Nice. Way to go. There'd be some doofus on Twitter, some burner account to go, ah, Trinity lacrosse doesn't know how to swim. You know, fire the coach. You know, so
I'm like, that's not even worth responding to. I'm like, that's out of my control. I'm like, go ahead, post it on there. Make yourself happy. But yeah, I think that right there kind of like, sets us up for like what to put our mental energy into and what to ignore. And it kind of helps us realize that pressure is something that we create for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we create some expectation for ourselves or our teammates, or we got to do this to look good on social media. Even if we, you know, like I said, even if we have success, there's going to be people that say dumb stuff about it. And I'm like, I just let it go. It just kind of is what it is. But yeah, that's why the circle of control, I'm like, look, you know, if we can keep our mental energy into these four things and ignore all the other things and just make the next play, I think that sets us up for success mentally.
I think it also simplifies things and it makes stuff a lot easier. When your thoughts and your actions and everything, it's the stuff that you can control. When you just focus on that, it really, I think it sets you up for a lot of success, because when you start getting emotional on the field, things can take a quick turn for the worse. And I've always tried to be the player that is very level-headed no matter what happens. And I always find success in doing that. So I think it's important, and I think it's a great thing that Coach Schroeder does.
Mm-hmm. It's tough. Sometimes I want to respond.
Yeah, it is.
I get cut off in traffic. I'm like, yeah, I can put one hand on the wheel and one out the window, but I'm not doing that right now. I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let it go. It's out of my circle of control. So yeah, I'm glad that it works on some level. So, but yeah, that circle of control is something that we're very intentional about.
Mm-hmm. And then, so obviously, every senior class is different. Like, your 23s are going to be different from your 24s. It's like, how do you use each individual class and use their talents to provide the best possible team of connection that you can do?
Right. So we have to look at, like, what do they do well? You know, we don't have, like, at Trinity, we don't have, like, a cookie cutter robotic system, okay,
yeah,
at all. Because we kind of want to play around what our guys can do well. Let's build it around them and their talents rather than trying to make them square pegs and round holes. So I think that's the first thing, is to evaluate, like, what are our strengths? SWOT analysis, we would call this in corporate accounting, SWOT, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. So we're like, okay, what are our strengths? And then, like, what's exploitable? And then how do we fix, like, what's exploitable? Well, do we fix that with somebody in this class or somebody in a younger class? Or do we move some people around, or do we change some tactics? So, but it starts with, like, evaluating what the strengths of our people are.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I think that's going to wrap up today's episode of the Uncensored Podcast. I'm Carter Haas.
Noah Hollister.
Pete Schroeder.
Thank you for listening.
Happy birthday, Will Petrando. He's our manager. He turned 21.
Happy birthday,
happy birthday, Will.
Is it today?
Yeah, I think it's today.
Man, I'd have to send him something.